everybody, Matt here, and welcome to Pop Culture Podcast. Today, we kick off a quartet of episodes in which we will be featuring The Road Trip. Our first stop is the Philadelphia Star Trek Convention, the official Star Trek Convention, that is, mind you, of the Philadelphia area, which of course was held in Cherry Hill, New Jersey, this past weekend. The podcast starts off with Pete and I preparing to walk in, wondering what adventures will be ahead of us. So Pete, here we are. We're about to walk into the Crown Plaza yet again for this year's Star Trek Convention. This one focusing on Deep Space Nine, but I think we've missed many of the Deep Space Nine people. We're about 40 feet away from the entrance. What are your thoughts?
Well, this being the 20th anniversary, and I see a faux Cisco on the way up here, gentleman in the uniform. I would have liked to see more of a Deep Space Nine presence, but
picture being taken by Doctor Who, by the way.
Yeah, breaking the fourth wall there. But yeah, I mean, it is what it is, and
wait, I need to stop recording so I can take a picture of the guy taking the picture. So there we go, picture just taken. Have Doctor Who taking a picture of Star Trek people, which my mind is pretty blown. So this is gonna be good. And we just walked through the door, and Renee Auberjonois walked right past us, looking like DS9 started 20 years ago. But you know what? It's all good. That's just pretty awesome.
And you know what? That I didn't notice him is a testament to his shape-shifting ability.
Absolutely. He shape-shifted into a man into his 70s, but we love him just the same. So that, we will check in after some adventures. What comes next are our thoughts as we drive home, having had a wonderful afternoon indeed. So Pete, here we are, driving back from the Philadelphia Star Trek Convention held in Cherry Hill, New Jersey, 2013. We laughed, we cried, we at one point considered Hari Kari at one particularly boring moment. But overall, I'd say we got bang for our buck, bang for our $25 a piece.
I would say so. I mean, you're not going to recreate some experiences. You know, we had a great experience last year, and you know, I think you're at the mercy of who's around on the day you're available to go. And yeah, it was good, not great.
Yeah, and as you say, the mercy of the day. Like last year, we went on Sunday just because I think that's what suited our schedules. That happened to be when, we'll go character names, when Geordi, Riker, and Data were there. And, you know, all had great presentations. This year, because of scheduling circumstances, we could only go on the Sunday. So we had more of the likes of your Odo, your Neelix, the perpetual Lita.
Nog.
Rom. Kind of the, more of the, wow, they're all single-named characters.
Yes. So, more of the character actor, you know, archetype.
That's a good point as well. Not leads.
Right.
Not
and,
leads.
You know, over the past couple days, they had, you know, Cisco. I'm spacing on the character's name. Captain of DS9 of that show. You had Michael Dorn. You had Worf last night as well. And Friday night, more again of the character actor, you know, motif with a couple more of the Ferengi actors and, you know, a deep character actor as far as Star Trek as a franchise goes, and Jeffrey Combs, who's played, you know, a number of characters throughout two series, Deep Space Nine and then Enterprise. So, you know, again, you get what you get and you don't get upset. And, you know, good time today. We can cut to the quick of it and say what we kind of chafed at.
Well, at the presentation, I guess there are two things I chafed at. First was, in order for Creation Entertainment, the company that puts these on, in order for them to retain the value of their $350 gold ticket 3-day extravaganza, which we did not pay for. Well, first of all, I should say part of the value that you get out of that overpriced ticket
is the ability to sit in the front half of the room. So we literally were in the second, we just happened to choose seats which were in the middle of the room.
With a minute, by the way, you know, dime-sized sticker with a number on it.
Yeah.
In the center of the chair, okay? Which, I don't know about you, I did not see when I sat down.
I did, only because last year I stole one out of anger.
Okay.
I mean, basically, it's this. It's, if you pay for the more expensive thing, then you get your, you have your own assigned seat. Which, of course, is it's them creating a supply and demand thing. And you and I spoke a little bit about, for me, as a casual convention goer, I'm annoyed by that. Now,
As am I.
Is there a flip side argument to make to say, well, that pricing model also makes these conventions possible? That if you're able to get a little bit money out of this, get a little bit more money out of your higher end people, that then means you can attract the top talent, which then makes the entire thing feasible, which then makes the hotel fill up with people who are there for the 3 days, you know, and so on and so forth. Okay, maybe without these golden ticket people, you know, we would have just sat at home today in our separate homes and, you know, done nothing. But yeah, so we're sitting there towards the end. We're also with, you know, we're with a couple other people, one of which, you know, guy you know from your job and his 11-year-old daughter, and you'd think that her presence would have been enough to be like, ah, young whippersnapper, we'll just let it go.
Right.
But no, we have one of the workers come up to us and tell us to move two rows back. Side note, it was the same worker who was LeVar Burton's handler last year, recognized her. So that's that. The second thing, I mean, should we move at this point chronologically?
Well, let me address this one, because it struck me before even that incident happened, you know, what have we done? And the irony, if I can get all meta here for a second, that we're at a convention about the future where greed, disease, war have been eliminated. Money is no longer the driving force. And, you know, seeing a gentleman in the restroom who's got to wash his hands just like I have to wash my hands, but he's got his little gold pass on a lanyard. And what have we created here, Matt? We've created a caste system for a following of a TV show that preaches against such. And I've got more than a little bit of a problem with that. So when we were asked to, like you said, move a whopping two rows back, okay, why that couldn't go and where they might not realize they're cutting their nose off despite their face, that two rows, that 20 rows is not going to drive me to drop whatever the figure is to sit that much closer. It's just not going to happen. So they're, you know, thinking in terms of incentivizing it, I think it's counterproductive.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of taking, like, here's what it does. You say, who's your number one headliner of the 3 days? This year, it's Avery Brooks. You know, who's like your number two? Michael Dorn. And in order to be up close to those two, like, here's what they know. They know that's going to get you 80% sold on the gold ticket, and that's going to create a feeding frenzy over the first 10 rows, and then the next set of 10 rows, that can still be gold seat for the people who missed out on the first 10 rows because there's this feeding frenzy, you know, tickets go on sale midnight, you know, whatever it is that they're doing there to help drive sales.
But they clearly weren't filled.
Today, yes.
Certainly not to the extent that would lead you to believe that it was a smashing success. I mean, listen, I think they have, you know, the idea that we need to sell X amount in order to make this happen. And they're not going to put their name out there either. Like, oh, you know, we're going to have the 20th anniversary Deep Space Nine, and you had every regular here from that except Chief O'Brien and Dr. Bashir, you know, both of whom, not as if the actors who were here over the weekend were not working steadily, many of them are, but you know, O'Brien, Colmeany is on. Is that show still on the Western?
Hell on Wheels.
Is Hell on Wheels still?
I believe so. Yeah.
Okay. So you know, for all we know, he's filming that.
Right.
You know, he changed his name a couple times. So I'm just going to go with Bashir.
Right.
You
know, Alexander Siddig.
Right.
Siddig.
And he's been Siddig El Bashir as
Fidel.
Well. Yeah, Fidel. Okay. You know, he has done a lot of work. I know he's done some directing as well. And he's more of an international type of actor. But suffice to say that, you know, just let it go, man. And the fact that, again, we were with an 11-year-old, that's your market of tomorrow, man.
Right.
You want her coming, you know, 10 years from now and dropping the gold pass or whatever it is. So I just felt that was kind of counterproductive. And then we had the presentation with Odo and Neelix. Matt, what'd you make of that?
Well, let me say, Pete, I was born in 1980. So they were referencing the television show Benson, which literally one time I read about on Wikipedia, probably at like midnight as I was just clicking around and got off on a tangent, on a tangent, on a tangent. I don't know what Benson is about. I've never seen an episode of Benson. They made reference, I think, to it going off the air in 1984, although maybe that's when it started.
86. Well, allow me to enlighten you and any of our viewers.
Yeah, welcome to the Benson Fan Podcast, everybody.
Yes, which it turned into such as a result of their, you know, scripted banter that took place.
Scripted being both a loose term and a very strict term, but more on that in a moment.
So I do remember Benson, you know, being the eldest member of PH Geek here and often chided for such, but I'm here for my historical perspective too. It was a show about Robert Guillaume was the Benson character, the titular character, and it took place in the governor's mansion. I want to say it was California governor's mansion. And the Odo actor Rene Aubergenois and the Neelix actor Ethan Phillips. Ethan Phillips was the chief of staff. Pete and Odo's character escapes me. They were often at odds. They were, you know, the foils for Benson, if you will. It was a mildly amusing, you know, sitcom, yada yada. You missed nothing.
Okay. So, well, that's great. And we're going to pause the narrative here just to say, I don't personally feel that any of these Star Trek actors doing a presentation, I don't feel that they are required to stick only to Star Trek stuff. You know,
certainly.
I've seen all your episodes. Tell me whatever delightful story you want to tell me. These guys, it was billed as some sort of, what if Neelix, you said that Ethan Phillips' character's name on Benson was Pete.
And Clayton was Odo's
Clayton was the other one. So it was billed on the website. Pete reaching.
Allow me to read what it was billed as in the little, you know, program they throw you when you throw your $25 down to get knocked three seats back. Ahem. So, special performance starring Rene Aubergenois and Ethan Phillips live in an area premiere theatrical piece! Exclamation. Free for all! Exclamation. Just don't be in the wrong seat. Kafka meets Escher meets Lenny Bruce when Ethan Phillips meets Neelix, which that's impossible because that's the character he plays. Okay? Meets Pete, meets Clayton, meets Odo, meets Rene Aubergenois. Try to imagine Clayton talking to Pete about Star Trek, or Odo and Neelix discussing archival episodes of Benson, or Rene and Ethan reminiscing about both shows and the characters they played, all wrapped up in a rapid-fire, often scatological, gags, followed by a discussion by these two talented performers. So, creation people learn what a friggin' comma is for and where to place it. And B, whatever.
Well, here's how it starts. It starts with lights go down from the previous speaker, who we'll discuss in more glowing terms in a bit. Lights go down, two workers come out, put out two stands, that you can put your script or your paper on.
Director's chairs.
Director's chairs. Then lights go up, and the two of them are on stage, these two actors. But they both have their phones out, and they're back to each other, like they're wandering around. And finally, Ethan Phillips' phone rings, and he answers it, but René Auberjonois is by the microphone, starting to do shtick, because he's saying, Peter, Peter, and Ethan Phillips is nowhere near a microphone, in a room that has 1,000 chairs easily.
And there are $350 gold card chair members who are like, is he really calling them? And the murmuring and, oh, it was scatological, gagging. All right. But, here's the way I felt, Matt. I felt like after 35 minutes of a Benson reunion that a Star Trek convention broke out.
Yeah, Pete, just to review, how long did they do this?
I kept counting my watch, okay? 35 minutes is a pretty strong estimate in terms of how long this went on.
And it was insipid. It was not rapid fire, in part because René Auberjonois, who bless his heart is 74?
73.
And also initially said he couldn't see the script on stage because the lighting was so low.
And admitted he is going for hearing aids upon his return to Los Angeles next week.
So with all that in mind, he clearly hadn't looked at the script before. And there were multiple times where he would be like, so what you are telling me is that you have a giant thing down there? And then he would realize that he was misreading or whatever, and on his second reading, it would be this delightful veteran actor like, so, what you're telling me is that you've got something big down there? Like, it was this complete change in performance.
How about the time slot in the middle of the afternoon? Again, we're with, a buddy who's brought his 11-year-old daughter who just absolutely fell in love with Star Trek Deep Space Nine through DVD and Netflix and, has been looking forward to this for a year, okay, since she attended her last convention last year. And, granted, thank God they warned us, audibly, it was not done, again, in Creation's little handout here, that it was going to get a little salty. And sure enough, it did. And you almost sensed some hesitance once they did that.
Yeah. I mean, there was probably 5 solid minutes of dick jokes, how big your dick is. And some were funny.
Well,
and
that's something they often joke about when I'm around, how big my dick is. But we digress.
Oh, boy. Bottom line is, it was a profoundly unfunny 35 minutes about a show that ended before
Reagan's presidency.
Right. It was just tremendously awful.
And they broke in and out of it multiple times too. So,
yeah.
The timing that they may have had with it at some point, maybe when they were doing it more often, was in no way evident. I mean, they clearly have a rapport from, 33 years of association and, seeing each other at a convention and, having worked together for 7 seasons. Once the Star Trek convention broke out at the Benson reunion, to get the story of how René got the part on Deep Space Nine and, went to lunch with Ethan Phillips, and then 2 years later, Ethan Phillips was to land the part on Voyager, both very much in the same character, actor, role, covered in latex, was cute and lent a lot of symmetry, and you can see where you could almost tell the way they set the story up that Ethan Phillips figured, well, these are my prospects going forward. Oh, hey, Renee got this role. I should look to get something like this. Maybe my buddy can put a bug in the ear of the producers over there. Oh, you know what? I know 6 months out before everybody else does that they're going to be making another spinoff, that it's going to come through Deep Space Nine. Let me get my casting agent on that and take it from there. So that was cute. And yeah. Once we got to the nitty gritty, it was certainly worth it.
Once there were questions... Look, when in doubt, stop your shtick and have the audience ask questions. Because even some of the questions about Renee doing stuff on the MASH movie, which is mid-70s, late-70s?
I think...
You know, like...
I think that was earlier in the 60s. I think that was 68 or 69.
Oh, yeah, because the show would have been on. Right. I mean, either way, hearing him tell the story of how his line, the evolution of his line, you know, he was drafted, like, I love hearing that stuff. It's the behind-the-scenes Hollywood stuff where he would never improv when their cameras were rolling, but during rehearsal, Robert Altman let you improv, and he improv that line, and Altman loved it, and now it goes on to be the most quoted line from the movie, and it's part of the Oscar clip, and that's great. I don't care that has nothing to do with Star Trek. That's great. I'm going to forever take that story with me when I watch Deep Space Nine again in the future. Just not a good... That first 35 minutes was just awful.
It was bad. And then, I almost feel... And the creation people that are listening, because we know you are, and you're taking this criticism, constructively, of course. Vet what people are going to ask during the Q&A portion. You do it at a radio for a show, do it here, and that you're going to get a guy who already got Ethan Phillips' autograph to go up and, ask, hey, what's your favorite episode that you were in? Ask that when you get the autograph. Really?
I'm going to disagree slightly. To me, part of the joy of taking audience questions, me as an audience member, part of the joy is what whack job is going to ask something that I can roll my eyes at? And how can these veteran performers who have spent time performing on this stage, the stage of conventions, how can they turn that, turn a dud of a question into a home run? And how quickly can they do it? I love seeing these people, turn on some, little lazy curveball and smashing it out of the park with some great story.
Well,
I love that.
In this case, it was Renee saying, this is the last question. And then when it was a question for Ethan Phillips, this is not the last question. I'm not going out like that.
Yeah.
And then he did go out like that.
Yeah.
And listen, you pay your money, you go in, you're going to see these people. We walked in, and literally we walked into Renee. You got a better look at him because I just saw a statuesque elderly gentleman with a little bit of a beard, and you squint your eyes and you don't know who it is, but Matt expertly pointed him out there. So we saw him head in to the restaurant there before, an hour or so before he hits the stage. And, you're kind of paying for that, too.
Yeah. I mean, in that lobby, that means we've now seen Jonathan Frakes, Marina Sirtis, and Renee Auberjonois. Wow, that's a good lobby. That's a good lobby.
It is. And, I just feel like there's a theatrical and dramatic medium to be drawn out of that, I just get this feeling. So maybe one already has been.
You never know, Pete. You never know. Now, speaking of drama, this isn't all tragedy.
It's not.
What was the best panel of the day, the best speaker of the day?
I got to go with Gates McFadden, with Dr. Crusher there.
My regret is that we, in part because creation, I really feel like they did not know what was going on today between the guy who took my money and gave me the program asking me 10 seconds later if I need a program or if I'm going to share with you.
Right.
Him being confused when I gave him $30. He's like, oh, I'm going to get you $5 back. Things like that. It would have been nice if he said, hey, Dr. Crusher is speaking right now. But when we did make our way in there, we got to hear probably the last half of an incredibly buoyant, delightful talk that she was giving.
Right.
Much of it, Trek stuff, other stuff, talking about her appreciation about teaching acting and teaching dramatic related things at the at various college levels, including USC.
Just laden with sincerity, yeah. And you know, you'd almost like to see a sign, you know, now in the ballroom, Gates McFadden.
Yeah.
You know, or hey, guys, I realize you're just getting here. You know, Gates just went on. You know, you may want to get in and check that. Because we're cruising around the dealer tables. There's nothing there we haven't seen, you know, 500 times in the last several years. You know, and you can hear something is going on in there. But yeah. Part of it, too, is you don't want to open the door in the middle of something. You don't know if it's trivia or you don't know if somebody's speaking. So we go in and we caught, I would say, yeah, the last half of it. And it was great.
Yeah, it really was. I mean, hearing her talk a little bit about her dance background. There was a cute fourth grader that asked a question, something that then led to Gates McFadden talking about her joy. Oh, it was, can you tap dance as well as Dr. Crusher did in the episode where she teaches Data how to dance?
Right.
Gates McFadden gives a one beat pause and goes, yep. I dance better than that. And she brings down the house. She starts to do a little pantomime tap. She's talking about her love of dance, her love of tap and all this. She,
right.
And it's just, as you said, sincerity is the perfect word to describe it. Just such a sunny person. Also somebody 64 years old. Right. Let's just say, wow.
Yeah.
Let's just say.
And again, this is not to demean by comparison, but you're getting different things from different people. And that's part of it as well. You know, you cast those roles to type, and it's almost as if when you bring them around for the show, for a convention, you need to balance it out in some way. You know, yeah. Last year, Frakes and Spiner and Burton, and you know who's going to be, you know, a little bit more of a cut up, and who's going to shoot it down the middle. And similarly so here. And then, of course, we had the wonderful Chase Masterson, Lita, from Deep Space Nine, and quite a bit of other work.
Yes, and I think I took more... I think I was more annoyed with what I'm about to describe than you were. And I know I should not be annoyed, but she basically gave the exact same... talk at times word for word that she did last year. And I know that shouldn't bother me because 2 minutes ago I just got done describing what these people do as a role. And I understand that it's a role. And I understand that there's all that. But it definitely was like, if I need to hear, like, you know, the story of, you know, how Ben Rahm is saying, Lita! And then she goes, and then she takes the breath. Like,
right.
All of that
when
pantomime.
He's there.
Right.
Which, can we get the two of them together?
Yeah, how about just have him come up on stage for part of it and talk about how great it was.
Have him come running up from the back of the room.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Say that.
Yeah, think how great that would be. We've all seen kind of stuff on the stage where you're like, oh crap, some crazy guy at the back of the theater is yelling, and then you realize it's part of the show.
Right.
That would have been great. That would have been great. But no,
you know,
I don't know why, but you know,
she does quite a bit, and she talked about it both years we've seen her of work with former inmates who had gone to jail for gang-related activities, and she donates a significant portion of what she makes at these to that, and, you know, does great work there. You know, everybody would agree. Okay, same story. you know, I delighted, Matt, that you pointed out, you know, she sings two songs off her new CD, which she points out is has been released since coming here last year, when she sang the same two songs that she sang last year when the CD was out.
Yeah, and told the story about the producer who was like, no, you can't do this song. And we're supposed to be going, what song? It's not a jazz song. And she's saying, but the audience that I'm going to share this with at conventions like this, conventions, they'll get it.
Matt just waved his hand majestically towards an imaginary audience, I should point out, dear listener.
So yeah, and this portion, this Chase Masterson criticism is done certainly with love, because she's...
Oh, she's great. She's great. So personable with the fans. And again, not to say that others aren't, but we've observed her far more than the others. And, you know, just super relatable, and that she's done this long. And, you know, and again, Renee Auberjonois was signing autographs and drawing pictures for Doctors Without Borders and stuff. And they do that. So there is quite a bit of worth to just the interaction they give with the fans, and then what they choose to do with the proceeds. But yeah, you kind of, all right, can we get at least a wrinkle if I was here last year?
Yeah.
You know,
because as you know, now we'll give Creation some credit. As you know, it's a venue that's on the smaller side. But if you look at their website, the lineups that they bring to Cherry Hill, New Jersey, you know, which they're kind of counting as, you know, the Philadelphia area, those lineups are oftentimes, you know, 80 to 90% of what they will bring to Toronto, or maybe not Vegas. I mean, maybe Vegas is 110%, but, you know,
right,
their average convention, this is not pared down by that much. It's a lot of these same people. So it's to their credit that that's the case. It's not a big venue by any means. So we, you know, we're lucky to have this less than an hour drive from our homes. And given that it is about the talent, they bring in a lot of talent. To their credit, they bring in a lot of talent. And you know, under different timing circumstances, I would not have ruled out going 2 days,
right,
depending on, you know, schedule and money. You know, I wouldn't necessarily be like, oh, this is, I must do it. But also, we've been to so many conventions at this point that, like, to see the vendors, like, I'm kind of sick of the vendors at this point, you know?
Yeah, oh, for sure.
But credit to Creation for getting all these people, whether it's the people we saw today, the people who we didn't get to see the previous days. It, you know, they put on, I'm not going to say they put on a good show, but they get talent to put on a good show.
Right. You know, had I to do over, I would have gone Friday night. But you live and you learn, and,
right,
you know, often the Sunday tends to be a little bit more available for us in terms of checking it out. But again, you know, you get what you pay for, and I think we got the bang for our buck. I kind of pity the gold member.
There's no way. I mean, I know in addition to the seats, they pack it with a whole bunch of stuff. Like, your $350 also comes with, you know, complimentary photo op with, you know, five different actors, and the, you know, the cocktail hour that's going to be attended by this, you know, this one and that one and the other. That's all great. Part of me is just like, I don't need that. Like, I don't need to be in a room for 45 minutes with, you know, Michael Dorn and get, you know, have him talk to me and a group of five or six people. Like, that just almost, to me, turns into like, you know, like I'm the John and this is the Star Trek whorehouse. Like, I personally don't need that.
I can't imagine the awkwardness with which that's conducted. I mean, it's, and even then, you know, I don't have a problem saying I've paid for, you know, a handful on one hand of autographs. but you know, it's kind of the closest thing I've ever come to a drug deal. It's I put $20 down and all right, what happens now? You know, it's like that. And as we were discussing between you, me, and you know, our other friend, you know, never would pay for an autograph that you didn't get yourself, because it's the story that goes along with it in terms of the relatability of the signer, whatever banter you have in between. I mean, just to see you, Matt, you know, and I have photographic proof of it, you know, get LeVar Burton's autograph as, you know, your childhood hero, excuse me, last year, you know, that was worth it.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, this, you're right, the story I'm going to forever get to tell, you know, where, you know, I thought about what I wanted to say to him, and what can I say in the 30 seconds I'm going to be, you know, one-on-one with him, and, you know, like, you're right, you kind of, you know, I can, let me pause my excitement for a minute to say, well, I know I bought 30 to 60 seconds of his time to tell him whatever I want to tell him, and that's kind of the deal there, you know, and while that happened, you know, while I had my 60 seconds of LB, you know, an autograph happened along the way.
Right.
But, yeah, you're right. I mean, yeah, I feel like there's so little, like, when I go into one of these, I win the lottery tomorrow, I don't go to a convention and go, oh, look, here's all seven, you know, Next Generation actors photographed and signed. Frankly, I wouldn't pay $20 or $30 for that. I might be tempted at $20 or $30, but when I look at other autographs that either, you know, people have given, maybe other people have bought them and given to me, or at least they have a story behind it, or it's a present, or it's, you know,
right,
blah, 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 or, you know, the couple I've gotten myself, like, those are the $30 to spend to have an actor sign.
It's the memory.
It's the memory, and that then makes it priceless. So, overall, I guess, I don't know, that's just about that. Yeah, well, you know what? There, because they had tightened up the presentation schedule, I think we saw less people walking around this year, because so many, because probably you at any given time had 400 people in the main ballroom, if that's the proper term.
And there was still at least one more presentation to go for the day, but we kind of hit our fill and we were getting hungry and, you know, we got other things to get home and take care of before, you know, the week commences. So, you know, you hit a critical mass. I was a little disappointed given that, you know, we're just about 3 weeks out from a Star Trek movie, the lack of any kind of presence. You know, I don't know. Hey, Paramount, throw a bunch of, you know, half-sheet posters there. Hey, Star Trek Into Darkness, you know, May 17th, that kind of thing. Get an extra. Get somebody. And granted, you know, you're talking about two different casts and iterations and everything there. But I just thought they'd make a little bit more of that opportunity. We were talking on the way down, and, you know, Matt knows me as Spoiler Pete, and I already know everything there is to know about this new movie and still hungrily anticipating it. And I said to Matt, I'm a little concerned you're going to be able to hold out from the spoilers and the amount of volume that it's reaching at right now. I was a little concerned we were maybe going to get some inadvertent ones, but I guess that panned out for us.
Well, you know what, Pete? I'm reminded of the title of that Philip K. Dick story that went on to inspire Total Recall. I believe the title is
We Can Remember It For You Wholesale.
We Can Remember It For You Wholesale. That's the entire business that went on today. The entire business, whether it's creation, whether it's the vendors, whether it's the people speaking, whether it's the people signing autographs, it's all your memories being sold back to you. And I don't mean that as
pejoratively,
as sinisterly as that might sound. Because I went in there knowing what the price was. I went in there knowing what the going rate is for autographs. That's all online. That's all. I feel like I have a sense of it. You know, your bigger end people are the $30 to $40 range. You know, $20 to $30 for your mid-range people.
Right.
no less than 20 for the lowest end. Fine, I get that, but they're selling back your nostalgia. Or let me even make it less pejorative. The entire exercise is one of nostalgia, which is different than sell you on a future product. Nobody in there is selling something that's going to come out tomorrow. The vendors are all selling. I pointed out at one moment, I said, Pete, look, if you want a 1991 Star Trek calendar, there it is over there right now. Go pick it up today. You know, it's like, who in the world would buy that? I certainly wouldn't.
Right.
But, you know, some of the toys that they're selling are toys that I had when I was 7. And, you know, I told you the box of the Ferengi fighter, which, P.S., never existed on Next Generation. You know, that box was in my parents' shed for the longest time, holding the fish fillet knives. You know, like, point being, that used to just be a box that a toy was held in, and I lost track of the toy at a certain point because I was 7 or 8 or 9. Now you're prepared to sell that box back to me for $30 because
they held it longer.
Because they held it longer and kept it out of the sun. Whereas for me, it was like, all right, here's my toy. Let me throw the box away.
Right.
So to make it a bit more positive, I have no problem saying there was no push for the new movie because Paramount's not there, Bad Robot's not there. It's a company that does nostalgia tours who's hired a bunch of independent contractors to tell you about the past. So,
and I see that, and you know, some of them are far more gracious in terms of being up front. You know, Chase Masterson is so appreciative on stage of her audience. But I just feel like you've got people walking around in the newer uniforms. Make some connection.
Yeah. Yeah.
Otherwise, you risk seeming like you're no longer relevant. And only stresses that more. And let's be honest. There's a reason why J.J. Abrams is making new Star Trek films. Because there is enough of a thirst there. Enough nostalgia over almost 50 years now of character and story to mine, albeit in a slightly different way with the reboot.
Yeah. Well, I guess, Pete, with that, shall we look ahead to some of our future adventures that we'll be having on the PH Geek Pop Culture Podcast?
Absolutely.
Where is this road trip hitting next?
Well, I believe we're going to take a stop into the Marvel Universe in the next week or so to Iron Man 3. And then we will be attending a little bit of a different Star Trek Into Darkness experience than a lot of others. We will be seeing it 2 days before most of our audience in IMAX 3D. And we will be bringing you those early impressions. Matt, of course, will determine how spoiler-free or not we will roll on that.
Well, I think that we'll go spoiler-full, mm-hmm. and we'll just make it clear ahead of time.
I'm ready now.
Here's, you know, like, here's that we went to go see the IMAX 2 days early, blah, blah, blah. So if you don't want to get spoiled and you haven't seen it, here's your warning. Here's right. why it's online on the day before movie, you know, on Thursday, the Thursday, not the Friday when the movie gets in full release. We'll kind of spell that out ahead of time, because
so when I point out that Cumberbatch is playing Gene Roddenberry come to the future in order to, you know, get the franchise he started back in order and create a time paradox, that won't be a big deal.
And is that when it's revealed that Gene Roddenberry is actually a character imagined to be the white analog of the black science fiction writer in Deep Space Nine, that you know, so that the entire thing has been a layer upon a layer upon a layer.
Yes, it's like a 7-layer dip.
Wow. After that, I think we still have one more adventure to look forward to, that being Philadelphia Comic-Con,
yep.
which is always a tremendous letdown from New York Comic-Con. in that Philadelphia Comic Con takes place in one big room.
Much like Philadelphia itself. One big letdown.
Yes, and by the way, our I don't know that you are aware of it, our friend of the show, John Bowman, who first started listening to us on the Revolution podcast and has followed us over to some other projects, he has since shown his mettle and his wisdom, and he has moved out of Philadelphia and back to Wisconsin.
Yeah.
So it's now, you know, set phasers to condition red in discussing the city of brotherly love.
Yes, we will pull no punches. So with that, we will say goodbye for now, and we will be talking to you soon.
Absolutely. Adios.
Bye-bye.